It is at this sacred place that the temple will be built. And as the reading concludes, Abraham names it for the spiritual vision and moral insight made manifest there. And Abraham called the name of that place Hashem Yireh, God will see, as it is said to this day, in the mount where the Lord is seen. Welcome to Parsha and Politics, Part 4, Parshat Vayera. The eyes have it, the vision of Abraham and the faith of Israel. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Parsha and Politics, How Torah Changed the World, is generously sponsored by Ivan Kaufman. Rabbi Soloveitchik's podcasts and essays on the Book of Genesis are sponsored by Brad Forney and the BCF Group. This week's episode is generously sponsored by Ron O'Day.
The intellectually intricate tradition known as Judaism often described itself as founded by a child, one gifted with the ability to see what adults could not. The Midrash tells of a 3-year-old Abram who in Mesopotamia studied the heavens with wonder and saw in the setting sun, the waxing and waning moon, and the cycles of the stars evidence for a creator which he cognized in the universe. For Maimonides, Abram's discovery of God took some time. The curiosity he displayed as a 3-year-old had to be joined with the intellectual maturity of an adult Abram, and it was only then that he discovered monotheism. This reminds one of a scene in the children's book The Phantom Tollbooth, where the boy Milo encounters another child his own age named Alec, but Alec's head is higher than Milo's, for he walks on the air. The book tells us, "Well," said the boy, "in my family, everyone is born in the air, with his head at exactly the height it's going to be when he's an adult, and then we all grow toward the ground. When we're fully grown up, or as you can see, grown down, our feet finally touch." And then he said, "You certainly must be very old to have reached ground already." "Oh no," said Milo seriously. "In my family, we all start on the ground and grow up, and we never know how far until we actually get there." "What a silly system," the boy laughed. "Then your head keeps changing its height, and you always see things in a different way? Why, when you're 15, things won't look at all the way they did when you were 10, and at 20, everything will change again." The point is clear. We see differently at different ages. Abraham's uniqueness lay in his ability to join perspectives together, melding maturity and childlike wonder. As we shall see, this theme is manifest throughout Abraham's story, and understanding how this is so will allow us to appreciate the fact that right now, hard-headed adulthood, joined with humble faith, is flourishing in the state of Israel. The metaphor for seeing provided by the Phantom Tollbooth is especially interesting because our reading is, rightly understood, all about sight. The reading's title, Vayera, literally means, "and he made himself seen." And so many references to sight appear in the parasha that we will only be able to reflect on most of them. The stage is set by the first passage, in which a verb is repeated. "And God appeared, or made himself seen, to Abraham on the plains of Mamre, as he sat in the door of his tent in the heat of the day." And then the text describes Abraham. "And he lifted up his eyes, and he saw, and behold, 3 men stood over him, and he saw. And he ran toward them from the door of the tent and bowed to the earth." What did Abraham see? God or 3 men? The standard rabbinic interpretation is that both sightings occurred. In fact, the phrase, "he saw," appears twice. Abraham's vision was able to encompass the presence of God and of 3 individuals. Abraham, the rabbis explain, was first visited by God following his circumcision. But even in the midst of this encounter with the divine, Abraham still caught sight of 3 sojourners to whom Abraham ran in greeting as a monotheistic minister to humanity. To see both God and man, one is reminded of a remarkable reflection about vision by the psychologist Alison Gopnik in her book, The Philosophical Baby. The title provocatively inspires us to ask how children see the world. For Gopnik, adults focus single-mindedly on one aspect of reality and in that moment see little else. But small children approach the world with constant curiosity. Their vision ranges widely, and they are actually, in a certain sense, more conscious than adults. Gopnik utilizes the phrase spotlight consciousness to describe the adult experience of the world, citing a famous experiment. Quote, "For adults, attention can also be endogenous, directed voluntarily at particular objects, like that spotlight. In this case, attending to one thing can actually make us less conscious of the other things around us, even salient or new or unexpected things." And Gopnik adds, "Some psychologists call it inattentional blindness. In one dramatic experiment," she continues, "designed by Dan Simons, you look at a video of several people throwing a ball. The instruction is to count the number of times the ball goes from hand to hand. The players weave in and out, so this takes some effort. It's like trying to follow the pea in the old shell game. Then the experimenter asks if you noticed anything strange. Nothing, you say. Now he plays the video again, but this time he says you don't have to follow the ball. And you see that someone in a gorilla suit walked slowly right through the middle of the scene. You were looking right at the gorilla, but literally didn't see it because your attention was so focused on the ball. End quote. Children, in contrast, according to Gopnik, take everything in. Their vision alights on one aspect of existence, then another. Gopnik calls this lantern consciousness, and it is found, she writes, in, quote, William Blake's World in a Grain of Sand, William Wordsworth's Splendor in the Grass. This kind of phenomenology, she notes, has historically often been associated with childhood, end quote. To read Gopnik's description is to be reminded of the Midrashic description of Abraham as a child, curiously examining every aspect of the universe. Here, in our reading, Abraham, already in his 90s, retained the capacity to see as he once did, looking at the world with wonder as he did as a child in Mesopotamia decades before. His spiritual sight is marked by a lantern consciousness. He sees God appearing to him, but he also sees three individuals sojourning in the desert. These men turn out to be angels, informing Abraham of the imminent birth of Isaac. Two of the celestial beings then journey to Sodom, in order to save Abraham's nephew Lot before the sinful city is destroyed. Here, too, sight is mentioned. And the two angels came to Sodom at evening, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot saw them and rose up to greet them. So we are told. Lot has clearly been trained by Abraham to look for guests, but Abraham, he is not. This is revealed as the theme of looking and seeing continues. The residents of Sodom seek to molest the visitors and are struck with blindness, symbolically reflecting their lack of moral vision. Lot, in protecting his guests, abominably offers his fellow denizens of Sodom his daughters instead, highlighting how his own moral perspective is also horribly spiritually stunted. Later in the reading, we are told that, given wine by his daughters, Lot will engage in incest, a sign of his being blind to both his daughters' identity and their spiritual dignity and sanctity. The theme of sight continues as Lot's family flees Sodom. They are warned by the angels not to look back, but Lot's wife does not listen, we are told. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. What is happening here? While some interpret this as a miraculous punishment brought upon Lot's wife for disobedience, the simple meaning here is that this woman, looking back, became mesmerized by the grisly specter suffusing the city, the fire and brimstone raining down, and therefore she ended up joining in its fate. Rabbi J.H. Hertz notes an historical parallel, quote, she looked back and lingered behind to be overtaken by the brimstone and fire from which the others escaped. A similar fate befell lingering refugees in Pompeii, end quote. In other words, Lot's wife's spotlight consciousness was trained on the destruction, dooming her as her husband and daughters trained their own focus on survival and life. Meanwhile, we are informed in the very next verse that Abraham, who has already been informed of his forthcoming child Isaac, still allows his roving consciousness to encompass the fate of faraway Sodom, thinking perhaps of the well-being of Lot. And Abraham got up early in the morning, and he looked out toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and toward all the land of the plain, and he saw, and behold, the smoke of the land went up as the smoke of a furnace. After this event, the miraculous baby Isaac arrives. Because Ishmael is an inappropriate influence, Abraham, to his dismay, is ordered to send Ishmael and Ishmael's mother Hagar away. In the desert, Hagar, is overcome by thirst and also by despair. And she went and sat down far away from him, a bowshot's distance, for she said, I will not see the death of the child. Again, the word sight. We are scripturally signaled that sight is still of the essence. This is confirmed by an arriving angel who announces that Ishmael will survive and father a great nation. And the language of the next verse is noteworthy. And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad drink. God, commentators explain, needed to open her eyes to see a well that was right there, but which Hagar, in her desperation, just did not notice. In the book The Philosophical Baby, Alison Gopnik notes that as children age, quote, attention gradually becomes more controlled by their internal agenda rather than by the intrinsic interest of external events. So it becomes more difficult to use their attention as a reliable indicator of what they see. And for adults, of course, if we decide to attend to the ball, even the wildly unexpected gorilla won't distract us. End quote. Hagar, similarly, does not notice the well. And her tale asks of us, what do we notice and what is essential that we often ignore? The theme of sight continues in the most terrifying text in the Torah. Abraham is asked to offer his child to the Almighty in the land of Moriah. He makes the journey, and the reading deliberately uses the same phrases with which it began. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes, and he saw the place from a distance. Abraham's roving vision, in other words, seems to center on this sacred spot, Mount Moriah. Or, as Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik once reflected, quote, Abraham was instinctively attracted by Kedusha, sanctity, the way the bee is attracted by the nectar of the flower. As Abraham ascends the site with his son, a heartbreaking scene unfolds. Again, notice the verb. Isaac asks, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, God will see for himself the lamb for an offering. See for himself. An angelic intervention saves Isaac, teaching Abraham that God desired not the death of Isaac, but rather the reminder to Abraham that children and life itself is a sacred gift of God. A replacement for Isaac is then sighted by Abraham. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold behind him another ram caught in the thicket. God has indeed seen to the lamb, and Abraham sees it. One of the most famous paintings of this story is by Caravaggio, and we have shared it with you. It shows Isaac in fear upon the altar with the ram right next to him. And despite the artist's brilliance, I find this painting preposterous. The drama of the story lies in the fact that originally the ram was not there when Isaac was upon the altar. It is only after the angel intervenes that Abraham's roving eyes, his spiritual lantern consciousness, sees God's gift. It is noteworthy that unlike Hagar, we are not told that God needed to open Abraham's eyes. The ram only appears at this point, and it is then that Abraham's consciousness, his sight, encounters it. It is at this sacred place that the temple will be built, and as the reading concludes, Abraham names it for the spiritual vision and moral insight made manifest there. And Abraham called the name of that place Hashem Yireh, God will see, as it is said to this day, in the mount where the Lord is seen. Thus was the vision of Jerusalem born. In the sacred city, Jewish politics and power is profoundly important, but the temple towered over Jerusalem at the site of the binding of Isaac in order to remind Israel of Abraham's spiritual vision of the presence of providence that controls power. This Jewish capacity for spiritual sight in Jerusalem stunned others. The Cambridge historian Simon Goldhill, in this vein, offers the following remarkable reflection on Pompey, the Roman general who conquered Jerusalem in 63 BCE and strolled straight into the Holy of Holies in the temple. Quote, Pompey walked straight in, we are told, to see what he no doubt expected to be a glorious statue to match the significance of the temple for the Jewish people. Romans regularly took cult statues of other cultures and transported them back to Rome in triumphant appropriation. He was amazed to find nothing there and remained baffled by the whole experience. This story, Goldhill writes, is told by Tacitus, the Roman historian, but is retold by the Jews. And Goldhill adds, the contrast of the emptiness of the shrine and the practical man of war's confusion is eloquent and for once allows the non-material its moment of assertion over the powerful realities of war and conquest. End quote. The Jewish people could endure defeat by Rome because it saw in Jerusalem what others could not. This made the city the locus of its love and ensured the Jewish return to Jerusalem today. Thus, the most famous photograph in Israel centers on a soldier standing at the Western Wall, the adult seemingly staring in childlike wonder up where Abraham once looked, the soldier seemingly seeing in that miraculous moment what Abraham once saw there. Our reading this week asks us to see Jerusalem, the Jewish polity, and Jewish history through the lens of adult maturity, but also via Abraham's vision made manifest in Mesopotamia, according to the Midrash, decades before he arrived in the Holy Land. Rabbi Norman Lamb once reflected on three archetypes of children that appear in the Passover liturgy, the wise son, the cynical wicked son, and the tam, the simple son, along with the child that does not ask. In a cynical age, he argued, it is not only the learned child that is a source of inspiration, but also the child that reflects simple faith. We are not meant to be childish, but we are in faith, meant at least in moments to be childlike. Rabbi Lamb wrote, quote, while it is true that wisdom is indispensable, both to general life and Jewish living, it is equally true that beyond all the complexities and subtleties that tantalize man's mind and confound his understanding, there stands the simple and sublime truth of the one God, author of all. What we need is the Tam, meaning the simple son, one who can include wisdom in his personality and transcend it, who can possess scholarship without displaying pretentiousness, who can develop his intellect and yet, in the moment he turns to God, abandon his self-consciousness and serve his maker with wonder, end quote. We all grow up, but we need to acknowledge several ways of seeing. In the Phantom Tollbooth, Milo asks Alec, the floating boy, quote, would it be possible for me to see something from up there? And Alec responds, you could, but only if you try very hard to look at things as an adult does. Milo tried as hard as he could, and as he did, his feet floated slowly off the ground until he was standing in the air next to Alec's beings. He looked around very quickly and, an instant later, crashed back down to the earth again. Interesting, wasn't it? Asked Alex. Yes, it was, agreed Milo, rubbing his head and dusting himself off. But I think I'll continue to see things as a child. It's not so far to fall. End quote. In Israel today, its citizens are facing a necessary war with the maturity and adult hard-headedness that is required, but also with a renewed spiritual vision that is quite simple, but not at all simplistic. Perhaps the most moving video from the Holy Land this week featured a secular Israeli anchor who, hearing the news that the Shin Bet had rescued one of the hostages, turned on live TV to a religiously observant commentator, asking to borrow a kippah in order to intone a devout blessing to God. Hillel Fold, a religious Israeli in the tech world, reflected online that, quote, 1 month ago, I could not imagine a scene like this, to which my friend Dan Senor replied online, it was always beneath the surface. Pre-October 7, we were all just distracted by other things. The spotlight consciousness of Jews was focused on division and disagreement. That, for several weeks, was all so many saw. But now, they suddenly see. This is Meir Soloveitchik, wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, looking forward to learning together next week. And may the week to come be one of good news for Klal Yisrael, Am Yisrael, and Medina Israel.